Like 100 other towns Roland had ridden through, first with Cuthbert and the other gunslingers cast out of Gilead, then alone in pursuit of the man in black, River Crossing had been cut off and thrown on its own resources. At this point, Si roused himself, and his voice captured the travelers at once. He spoke in the hoarse, cadenced tones of a lifelong teller of tales, one of those divine fools born to merge memory and mendacity into dreams as airily gorgeous as cobwebs strung with drops of dew. "We last sent tribute to the Barony Castle in the time of my great-granddad," he said. 26 men went, with a wagon of hides. There was no hard coin anymore by then, of course, and 'twas the best they could do. It was a long and dangerous journey of almost 80 wheels, and 6 died on the way. Half fell to harriers bound for the war in the city, the other half died either of disease or devil grass. When they finally arrived, they found the castle deserted, but for the rooks and blackbirds. The walls had been broken. Weeds o'ergrew the court estate. There'd been a great slaughter on the fields to the west. It were white with bones and red with rusty armor, so my dad's granddad said. And the voices of demons cried out like the east wind from the jawbones of those who'd fallen there. A village beyond the castle had been burned to the ground, and 1,000 or more skulls were posted along the walls of the keep. Our folk left their bounty of hides without the shattered barbican gate, for none would venture inside that place of ghosts and moaning voices, and began the homeward way again. 10 more fell on that journey, so that of the 26 who left, only 10 returned. My great-granddad, one of them. But he picked up a ringworm on his neck and bosom that never left until the day he died. It were the radiation sickness, or so they said. After that, gunslinger, none left the town. We were on our own. They grew used to the depredations of the harriers, Si continued in his cracked but melodious voice. Watches were posted. When bands of riders were seen approaching, almost always moving southeast along the great road and the path of the beam, going to the war which raged endlessly in Lud, the townspeople hid in a large shelter they had dug beneath the church. Casual damages to the town were not repaired, lest they make those roving bands curious. Most were beyond curiosity. They only rode through at a gallop, bows or battle axes slung over their shoulders, bound for the killing zones. "What war is it that you speak of?" Roland asked. "Yes," Eddie said, "and what about that drumming sound?" The twins again exchanged a quick, almost superstitious glance. "We know not of the god drums," Si told them, "merry word or watch. The war of the city, now." The war had originally been the harriers and outlaws against a loose confederation of artisans and manufactories who lived in the city. The residents had decided to fight instead of allowing the harriers to loot them, burn their shops, and then turn the survivors out into the big empty, where they would almost certainly die. And for some years, they had successfully defended Lud against the vicious but badly organized groups of raiders which tried to storm across the bridge or invade by boat and barge. "The city folk used the old weapons," one of the twins said, "and though their numbers were small, the harriers could not stand against such things with their bows and maces and battle axes."
"Do you mean the city people used guns?" Eddie asked. One of the albinos nodded.
"Aye, guns. But not just guns. There were things that hurled the firebangs over a mile or more. Explosions like dynamite, only more powerful. The outlaws, who are now the Greys, as you must ken, could do nothing but lay siege beyond the river, and that was what they did."
Lud became, in effect, the last fortress refuge of the latter world. The brightest and most able traveled there from the surrounding countryside by ones and twos. When it came to intelligence tests, sneaking through the tangled encampments and front lines of the besiegers was the newcomer's final exam. Most came unarmed across the no-man's land of the bridge, and those who made it that far were let through. Some were found wanting and sent packing again, of course, but those who had a trade or a skill or brains enough to learn one were allowed to stay. Farming skills were particularly prized. According to the stories, every large park in Ludd had been turned into a vegetable garden. With the countryside cut off, it was grow food in the city or starve amid the glass towers and metal alleys. The great old ones were gone, their machines were a mystery, and the silent wonders which remained were inedible. Little by little, the character of the war began to change. The balance of power had shifted to the besieging Greys, so-called because they were, on average, much older than the city dwellers. Those latter were also growing older, of course. They were still known as pubes, but in most cases their puberty was long behind them. And they eventually either forgot how the old weapons worked or used them up.